Welcome to Everything Is Real, a podcast about Yoko Ono. Everybody thinks they know Yoko Ono, but how much do we really know? My name is Stephen Cockcroft.
My name is Jason Carty.
And we are live on a cloud between Belfast and Dublin. Today, we're going to talk about Plastic Ono Band, but this album is Yoko Ono, Plastic Ono Band, unfairly dismissed as the companion piece to John Lennon's album of the same name, but obviously a much superior product. I think you'd agree with that.
I think it's a great record, and I think I have certainly revised my feelings about Yoko Ono in the last 10 years compared to how I listened to Yoko Ono as a teenager.
And I like to think I've had some small part in that.
You've been very, very specific about, you know, listen to Mind Train. It's probably one of the first starting points.
Mind Train is better than anything John ever did in his solo career.
Mind Train is great. And, you know, what's interesting about Yoko is, you know, you kind of grow up with a certain perspective on Yoko. And, you know, going back to her in my later years. But, you know, if you're a chin-stroking Mojo reader who's got any kind of love for krautrock, and that's a phrase I hate, krautrock. But, you know, if you like any of that music, you know, Can in particular and some of the other favorites, you got to love Yoko. There's some amazing music there. And it does run, you know, from the very experimental stuff through the, you know, Plastic Ono Band stuff into the very melodic stuff in the mid-70s. Yoko's great. There's loads to explore there.
She is. And I mean, it is a bit of a sort of hobby horse of mine to put together playlists and try and convince people that, you know, there's an easy way in through the sort of dance remixes that have been going on. But the kind of, this is, Plastic Ono Band is probably my favorite of her solo albums. And I mean, she is, you know, she's a shorthand for the kind of girlfriend that breaks up the band. Mm-hmm. She's forever cast as the dragon lady, the widow, the keeper of the flame. You know, she's the butt of jokes about her supposed lack of musical ability, and all of those things just get in the way. And, you know, even Paul has laid to rest the trope about, oh, Yoko broke up the Beatles. And, you know, it's been very heartening to me in the last kind of 10 years that suddenly she seems to be being accorded the kind of respect that I think is due to her.
Yeah, when you delve into some of that stuff, there is some great stuff there. And, you know, you kind of see now with distance that she does have her own thing, her own style going. And, you know, there is a Yoko Ono style. And how many people manage to formulate their own style? It's a style that maybe drives some people crazy, but if you dig it and get into it, there's a lot to enjoy there.
Yes, and I mean, I think the influence that she's had as well is now apparent. You know, everyone kind of says, oh, well, it's the B-52s and that, you know, Rock Lobster, and that's what Lennon heard in Bermuda in 1980, and that kind of brought him back to the studio. But it goes so far beyond that. And as you say, she was doing things in 1970 on this album that were ahead of Can and that kind of kraut rock experience. And, you know, one of the things that I think militates against people's appreciation of this album is it is seen as a sort of side project that, you know, John is the main event and this is the supporting act, or this is a kind of a companion piece. And it bears very little, you know, apart from the cover art, it has no relationship whatsoever to the music that you hear on John's Plastic Ono Band.
Yes. So how do we get to Yoko doing the Plastic Ono Band?
Well, I thought we might look at, you know, over the course of the next 2 or 3 hours at the kind of the background, her early life, you know, her father, her grandfather, her siblings, her university career, her early artwork. You know, or the alternative reality in which she actually becomes Mrs. Paul McCartney.
Well, that is her first Beatle interaction, is it not?
It is.
Depending on who you believe.
Yeah, well, Paul, we're going to believe Paul.
Of course.
he recounts that Yoko asked him, approached him first and asked him for a manuscript of a Beatles song that she wanted to give to John Cage as a birthday present, and in no way wanted to simply put it on eBay if such a thing had existed. And interestingly, Paul declines but sends her to John. So
there you go.
There you go. And that's a thing to conjure with, that it was actually Paul. And John actually does give her handwritten lyrics for The Word, which she doesn't put on eBay, but does give to John Cage as a lovely birthday present.
Now, Paul talks about this on Howard Stern. And doesn't Howard Stern sort of say, Paul?
Oh, come on, we know why she was really at your house.
He goes full Howard Stern.
I don't care for Howard Stern, I have to say, but Paul is quite coy about this. But clearly there was no spark, and he thought this is the ideal woman for John, and sends her around. So, but how interesting that would have been if she'd ended up in Wings.
Yeah, yeah, I guess so. Is that the end of our Yoko episode?
That's the end of our Yoko. Okay, well, moving on. So in addition to all of the things that she does, and people should check out her grapefruit book if you want to laugh. The other thing that people don't appreciate is how funny she is and how much humor there is in her work.
I would agree. And I, I think I've said on this podcast before, but I kind of had a realization a few years ago that I like music where I can see the sense of humor, where I can, it's not like I'm looking for funny music like the Goons, but you know, my boilerplate example is, I think Elvis Costello is funny. I think Paul Weller is not funny. And I like to see where the joke is. And sometimes I think even if you find Yoko a bit sort of abstract or avant-garde or out there, you can enjoy the people being annoyed by it. That makes me happy.
and for all, I mean, she does not take herself seriously. Can I very quickly divert into the Simpsons story?
Oh, go on.
So you know the episode of the Simpsons, the B-sharps?
Yes.
And at one point, you know, Barney turns up with his Japanese girlfriend, who is very clearly modeled on Yoko Ono. And they go into Moe's Tavern and they order a drink. And she says she would like some cocktail with a plum floating in it, served in a man's hat. And Moe is able to produce this from under the bar. So cut to years later, and she's curating an art exhibition. Yeah. In Iceland, I think, in Reykjavik. And she's soliciting submissions, and someone submits a cocktail with a plum in a man's hat, and she selects it and puts it into the art exhibition. You know, she has a sense of humor, and she does not take herself too seriously.
Yes, that's good.
She when she gets together with John, we'll gloss very quickly over the Two Virgins album, the Wedding album, Life with the Lions, even Live Peace in Toronto. These are not, I think, sort of albums as such. These are sort of more like diaries of what they're doing and what's happening in their life. So Plastic Ono Band is effectively her debut studio album. It's issued on the same day as John's album. It peaks at 182 on Billboard. But all but one track, it is recorded on a single day during John's Plastic Ono Band sessions. And we mentioned this is the 10th of October.
Yeah, so we said in the other episode, the 10th of October, which is the post-birthday day when they do I Found Out and a ton of covers, they go into the evening time and they go into these improvised Yoko pieces.
Yeah.
And is that the point, or do we know, like, was there a plan for Yoko to do some stuff anyway, or does it literally, the decision for her to make an album happens on the 10th of October?
You get the sense that this was a very spontaneous sort of happening.
Yeah.
You know, now, obviously she has, up to this point, she has recorded the B-side for Cold Turkey, the B-side for Instant Karma, Give Peace a Chance. So she is recording songs. She is recording music. But there may have been a plan to that she would record something or record an album, but this seems to have been a completely spontaneous session that they're on the the studio floor. They're jamming. You've got Klaus, you've got Ringo, you've got John. And you can hear the first track is Why. The second track is Why Not. And you can hear Lennon saying at the end of Why, were you getting that? You know, because this is a spontaneous thing that's happening. And Yoko would sort of makes the point that, you know, the engineers usually turn the tape off
when she gets going.
Whenever she gets going, whenever she starts vocalizing, and these are improvisations.
And you listen to those tracks, and first of all, there is form, because if we rewind all the way back to January 69, George walks out of the Beatles. John, yep. Paul, and Ringo are there, and Yoko just starts doing a version of this at that time.
Yes.
Which, depending on which side of the fence you're on, you're either laughing because it's funny, or you're like, how dare she do that?
It's the band the Beatles could have been.
But that is the brilliant thing about Yoko. She doesn't play second fiddle. She's like, oh, okay, I'll sing in this band. That's something to be really, that's quite remarkable, that she's not cowed.
No. You can't imagine anyone else, maybe Donovan, but you can't imagine anyone else having the kind of nerve to just say, oh, it's the Beatles. Yeah, I'll get up and give it a go.
Yeah.
But she's coming from that background where this kind of happening or this kind of improvisation is just par for the course.
Yes. And when Yoko's Plastic Ono Band starts, so I said in the John Plastic Ono Band episode, I kind of, as a teenager, came to the album expecting it to be full of primal screaming. I expected it to be angry and agitated. And you put on Yoko Ono Plastic Ono Band and you're like, oh, this is somebody who's been through primal scream and who's still trying to figure it out. So you're right. Sonically, in some ways, they're different, but they are both representing the same thing. And Yoko is literally representing that thing. And you listen to Why and you think, imagine being in the room when that noise is being made. Like, I'm being one of those people.
Yeah. I mean, it's just incredible. I mean, it's an incredible sound. And Lennon's guitar playing is incredible. You know, he's pulling all sorts of sounds out of his guitar over this kind of syncopated rhythm that Klaus and Ringo are putting together. I mean, again, you know, in the same way that I said, I really want to hear them doing these oldies. I mean, this is fantastic. This is so not what Ringo Starr is known for.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I remember listening to, you know, Yoko's Plastic Ono Band, and you kind of think, you know, it, when you compare it to Lennon and McCartney, in the John and Yoko relationship, John is Paul and Yoko is, you know, John in a way, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
When you get over to John and Yoko, Yoko is kind of the abrasive, slightly on edge one at times, whereas, and John is kind of the safe melodic one.
Yeah. I mean, Yoko is the one that's pushing the boundary of what, you know, anything is possible here. You know, I'm a huge fan of Yoko's work, and I really do think that John's work becomes much, much more interesting when she is inputting, you know, particularly around this time.
Yeah.
As she goes on through the 70s, she starts writing some more conventional songs. She starts working, and his influence on her starts to maybe tip the balance.
Yeah.
And I think her work becomes less interesting.
Yeah.
Still worth exploring, but less interesting.
And the other thing I like about, you know, when you get into Why Not, again, it does have this kind of prototype motoric beat happening to it. It's kind of static, yet it's propulsive at the same time.
And yes.
It reminds me of Björk. You know, you kind of listen to that and you think, actually, there's Björk stuff going on in here, you know?
Yeah. This is sort of parallel with and slightly ahead of what's happening,
in
Germany, this kind of krautrock that phrase, and you know, this is completely unlike anything that a Beatles fan or a rock fan will have been exposed to at this point.
And I kind of think, you know, if you're John Lennon and you've seen it all and you've lived it all, you know, to actually see, you know, your wife making that noise and doing that thing, you'd have to look and go, well, I haven't seen that before.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yes.
I'm enjoying this.
Yes.
You know, of course, you know, you think, because he's bored with being John Lennon in some
yeah,
ways.
Yeah, and I mean, you get little flashes at the end of Cold Turkey, where he's channeling that kind of screaming or that kind of vocalizing that Yoko does.
Yeah.
And if you go to the live album that comes with Sometime in New York City and you listen to the performance of Cold Turkey and Don't Worry, Kyoko, from the UNICEF gig in 69, it's unbelievable. And she has the cream of British rock musicians backing her up. And here she's got John Lennon, she's got half of the Beatles backing her up. On the next track, she's got three of the Beatles.
So the next track is Greenfield Morning.
Greenfield Morning, I pushed an empty baby carriage all over the city.
And you and I are generally in consensus that this is just one of the greatest things ever.
Ever. Absolutely. This is just sensational. I listen to this. Sometimes when I go back to this album, you know, you cannot listen. You're not in the mood to kind of just be exposed to that kind of noise that's coming off those first two tracks. This is a track I just go back to as a standalone track. This is right up there with the best thing anybody has ever recorded.
No, I have to admit, I think it's probably the track that when I heard it, I was like, oh, okay, I get it now. And
yeah,
you know, it's a good place to start. But you're saying like George is on this sort
yes.
of.
Sort of. This is there's a very interesting interview out there with Yoko and Sean where they talk about this, and Yoko's being sort of quite coy, and she said, "Oh well, there was a tape, and there was done by a very famous person. We took that," and she doesn't name George Harrison until Sean kind of prompts her to say, "You know, it was George." So this is a tape of George playing a sitar. And, you know, around the improvise, this is a track that is built up. So you have the improvisation and then you have this tape that they work into the performance. And, you know, George supposedly gave his blessing to this, said, yes, that's absolutely fine. So technically, you've got George, John and Ringo playing on this track. The other thing is, again, Ringo's drumming on this.
Ringo's drumming on this, even if you know, people listening here are allergic to Yoko's voice, just listen to Greenfield Morning, listen to Ringo's drumming and think, tell me this guy isn't just one of the great drummers of rock and roll of all time. It's just, and you know, we said in the other episode that Ringo says the track is what we're playing for. And he's so innate to go, oh, this is the track, this is what it needs, here I go. It's fantastic.
And I mean, it's the drums are sort of treated. There's a lot of echo on the drums, and but it's again just unbelievable performance. So all but one of the tracks for this album were recorded on that single day in October. The exception is AOS, which opens side two, and that was recorded back in February 1968 with Ornette Coleman. Now, I don't pretend to be a sort of a jazz aficionado. I'm not going to try and bluff my way through this.
Neither am I.
but he is a jazz sax player. He and his group appeared at the Albert Hall, 29th of February 1968. That he invited Yoko to come and perform, and this track was recorded during the rehearsal. So he does have a reputation as a sort of pioneer of that sort of free jazz style. So it fits absolutely perfectly.
Well, because this is recorded on the 29th of February, 68, it does predate John and Yoko. And it gives you a sense that, you know, Yoko had, you know, what her form or what her existence was before John entered the frame, you know, that this isn't something she's just decided to do.
No,
because she's you know, married to someone who makes records, that she has been doing this kind of stuff before. And
yeah. Yes, I mean, her background is as a visual artist, as a performance artist, but also music.
Yeah.
And she's sort of doing this in New York in the early 60s as part of that Fluxus movement. So she, yes, this is not something that she just sort of latched onto John and thought, oh, I could have a musical career.
Well, yeah. And you know, there are bits in AOS where, you know, she's screaming her head off, and it is audacious. It is one of those moments where you do laugh, and
yeah.
it's just like, oh my God, this is just you know, and it's, you know, live.
But I don't think she would be in any way offended by you laughing or kind of smiling at this.
Yeah.
There is humor in the work, and what annoys me is where you see on YouTube, there's a recycled clip of her in an art gallery doing these kind of screaming performances. Yeah. And they kind of say, oh, this is, Yoko's take on Back for Good by Take That. Or this is, you know, and you think, well, that's kind of funny, but it's kind of...
It's a quick joke.
It's a quick joke.
Yoko as a punchline is a bit tired.
Yeah, it is a bit tired. Yeah. The final two tracks, Touch Me and Paper Shoes, are sort of, they sort of merge together, and there's sound effects being built in here. And again, you know, Ringo gets a kind of spot in this. John is kind of going nuts on the guitar, and the whole thing works fantastically. Yeah. Well, and this is the probably the clearest picture to my mind of what they're doing in the studio. This kind of live improvised feel comes across best in this, I think.
And John had talked about this in interviews, that, you know, he's not an Eric Clapton type guitar player, but he has kind of a feel, and that's how he plays by feel. And, you know, there are bits in those tracks, Touch Me, where he's, you know, playing quite jagged guitar, and then he just kind of stops, and then it's kind of a nice drop in the middle of it.
Yes, it's that feel. He's got a sense. This isn't sort of random noise making.
No, it's not metal machine music.
No, there is a structure to this.
Yes.
And it's a structure that is developing in the moment, which is all the more impressive. I saw Yoko live once, twice, but I saw her live in the Astoria in London.
All right.
With Sean... band. It was around the time of the Rising album.
Yeah.
And there were quite a few instances of her doing this type of thing where Sean was going nuts on the guitar and she was just screaming. And it is the most exhilarating thing.
Yeah.
David Quantick was there.
Ah.
I remember having a chat online with David Quantick about being at that show, but it was sensational. There is something incredibly exhilarating about watching that happen.
Yes. Well, that's kind of what I was saying. I can imagine being in the room, you know, that this is how you're going to spend that time. And a lot of these recordings, they are about capturing a moment, you know, and they are snapshots of a space and time. Like, you know, they're improvised, but there is form. It's fascinating stuff, you know?
It is. I mean, I think that's and it's so far away from what John is known for, what Ringo is known for, what Klaus Voormann is known, but they just lock in there. And, the Beatles are not a jam band.
No.
You know, Ringo is not known for that, but just for this one kind of occasion, there's a kind of magic happening there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great stuff.
So it's not an album that, was very badly received at the time. I say it was treated very much as a kind of indulgence. Oh, this is John's wife. I think there was a review that talked about it as being a waste of wax.
Yeah. But there were one or two people who took it seriously.
Lester Bangs wrote a very kind of, you know, considered review of it at the time. And it's one of those albums that it has been reappraised. So suddenly people are saying, oh, this is fantastic. This is a great, influential and Rolling Stone 2016 say, this is an expressive, emotionally rich version of Krautrock being forged a few miles west, 41 minutes, of jazz, garage, rock, improvisation, something that funked and frazzled. And you think, well, its importance should not be understated. And you think, well, you know, where were all you guys back in the day?
But that is the thing. I mean, you kind of, you know, particularly with a track like Greenfield Morning, if you walked into a shop and you didn't know what that was, could you guess what year it was recorded in? You know, would you be able to put a finger on it? Probably not, you know?
I don't think so. I think that track in particular just kind of transcends the period in which it was made. And
yeah, it makes a lot more sense after time, you know? A bit like Wings Wildlife.
Yes. Moving on. I think much like Wings of Wildlife, it's a timeless piece. It exists. It sits outside time and space.
Yeah, I think Mumbo has definitely got a Yoko Ono influence. You know, Paul extemporizing over. You know, it's there.
You think, so what you're saying is Yoko was a big influence on Wings.
That's exactly what I've been trying to get at. You know,
I the pieces are falling into another piece of the jig. So it falls into place, but
I do like the idea though of having a pair of albums and the matching covers coming out on the same day. You know, I think maybe people would have liked John and Yoko albums to have always been paired, that they, you know, for Double Fantasy and Sometime in New York City, I think they probably would have liked a John and Yoko album separated. But you know, because we kind of got a sister album with Imagine, which was Fly,
yes,
kind of the sister record,
yeah.
But it's very apparent when you look at the covers of John and Yoko's Plastic Ono Bands that they have the complementary similar covers.
They're almost identical. In one photograph, John is leaning against the tree and Yoko kind of leaning against him, and then that's reversed. So you'd like to wonder how many people actually went in to buy the new John Lennon album and went home and with the new Yoko Ono album.
And thought it was great.
And thought it was great. So they each have a childhood photograph on the back. And really, unless you're looking very closely at the front cover, that's the only way to tell them apart. It's been re-released over the years as like a Ryko Disc CD. But the version that you should all rush out and get is the from a couple of years ago on the Secretly Canadian label. Sean has been curating this re-release program of Yoko's early career works. These are just gorgeous artifacts. I mean, they're beautifully done. The attention to detail, the sort of the inner sleeves are reproduced. There's posters, there's liner notes. You can get them on, you know, I think some of them come in different colored clear vinyl or white vinyl. The sound is incredible. And I would recommend investing in one of those Secretly Canadian reissue packages. It's a fantastic album in its own right. It sits alongside the Lennon album, but I think it stands up on its own.
I think it does. And I think as a piece of, you know, here is this person's experience in 1970 and how the Primal Scream, you know, where it got them to. It's a fascinating piece. And as you've said, you know, it's cut from the same cloth with John, Ringo and Klaus, you know, so it's all part of the same ecosystem. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, we talked in the John episode about the potential of a Plastic Ono Band box, but whether the Plastic Ono Band box should be a John and Yoko Plastic Ono Band box, I know there'd be a lot of people who'd have a problem with that, but I think that might be the way to go.
I think that would be a fantastic suggestion, because you say these songs, these tracks seem to have organically grown out of that session on that one afternoon or evening. So it makes perfect sense. I don't know if there are other tracks or other improvisations, or certainly the raw tracks for Greenfield Morning, etc., will be there. I think that would make perfect sense to have an all-encompassing box set. I would buy that.
You'd buy anything. But I would say it is kind of interesting or sad that, you know, when these albums come out in December, it's kind of the end of the whole Plastic Ono Band as a concept, because it began as a concept where Yoko said, oh, it's an imaginary band, the Plastic Ono Band. And John put these little, trinkets on top of his television. And said, oh, here they are. And they took a picture. And so the first single being Give Peace a Chance came out as a Plastic Ono Band single. That was the name of the act.
Yeah.
As was Plastic Ono Band, and this picture of these plastic Perspex tubes. The notion, and it's a very far-sighted and a clever notion, that a band is a conceptual thing, that, you know, John could say the Plastic Ono Band or whoever it needs to be at any given point in time.
Yeah.
It kind of falls away when these albums come out, which is a pity that he doesn't, that they don't keep releasing various albums as Plastic Ono Band.
No, that's absolutely right. I mean, this notion of you are the Plastic Ono Band, that was the ad. But then Yoko, her last two studio albums, she revived that name.
Yes, and it was a lovely thing to see. You're like, of course, because it's whatever we want it to be.
Yes, it's whatever we want it to be. And, you know, there were concerts in America, which I would have loved to have been at, you know, where Clapton turns up. Right. And plays Don't Worry, Kyoko. But she curated the Meltdown.
Oh, yes, the festival in London.
Which produced fantastic posters, which just simply said Yoko Ono's Meltdown. And I thought, you know, it does what it says on the tin.
That's exactly what you want.
And a friend of mine and I, we went along to see her at the Royal Festival Hall with Sean and the Plastic Ono Band, and it was fantastic, absolutely fantastic.
Yeah,
she did Mind Train. She did Mind Train.
Did she do Mind Train? Didn't she also appear in Belfast one day?
Oh, she did. This is the worst day of my entire life.
I brought this up.
In 1998, she had an art exhibition as part of the sort of Belfast festival, and it was in the Ormo Baths gallery. It is literally 50 yards, maybe 60 yards from my office, and she came, and I didn't know she was there. So I knew the exhibition was coming, and I was going to go to the exhibition, but I did go the next day and buy a signed I didn't see the woman herself.
Oh man, I'm sorry.
That is, you know, that's a real downer to end this episode of it.
Well, let's not. Let's just tell.
Well, let's not. Let's just tell people to go back. You know, we're always encouraging people to go back and listen to the records. If you're listening to John's Plastic Ono Band, or even if you're not, this is the album you need to listen to as well. And as Jason always says, we're available in the usual places. Get in touch with Jason on Twitter. I might let you join the Facebook group, we collectively, I think, urge you to go and listen to Yoko Plastic Ono Band. This has been Something Is Real.
Yoko is real. Ono. What did we call it?
A Yoko Ono podcast. Yes. The first of many, or the last of none. keep in touch on Twitter and Facebook. Give us nice reviews, particularly for this episode.
Yes. And, if you want more Yoko, let us know.
Let us know, and we'll see you next time.